Hey everyone, it is Katie and Janice Dowd coming at you from our first official episode, episode one of Recovering Relationships, a podcast where we talk about our personal real life experiences and rebuilding our relationship in my mom's early sobriety, maybe share some stories of things that happened in her active addiction. But we just want to share our experience to hopefully relate to those who may be in the thick of it right now, who want their feelings to be validated or want to gain a new perspective from the other side of it. My mom comes from a very from an educated perspective on the topic, as well as a lived experience on the topic being a recovering addict. And I just simply come from a lived experience on the topic. I've gained a little bit of education, but I'm not claiming to be have any sort of schooling background on this thing. I'm just lived experience. So here we go. Here is episode one. We hope you enjoy. We hope to at least entertain you. So here we go.
Okay, well, I want to say I think you did a great job with the introduction, and I never want you to dismiss your experience because I think most people who work in this field will tell you that the lived experience is so valuable. And I know also every time you've appeared on a podcast with me or come to one of my presentations, people have just sought after more information from you. So, with
Well, I
that
think
being,
that's, sorry to
go ahead.
interrupt. I think that's the only reason that I've become open to this idea is because I don't claim to, you know what I mean, like know as much as someone that studied this. But it has been people asking you to hear more conversations between us that has opened me up to trying. So here we go.
I think it's really important, and it's important from both people's point of view. From people like me who are alcoholics or addicts, we want to hear from our family members to find out what worked to help us repair our relationships or what didn't work. We want your advice and experience. That's one of the things that I tried to do with other people in my early sobriety, but it's also good for family members to listen because, one, I think the most important thing is they know they're not alone. There's someone else with an experience like them. They might get some coping skills or tools or things to help them cope with, whether they're family members in active addiction or early sobriety or longer.
Definitely. So I'm definitely about to expose myself in one of my like guilty pleasures. But on my way home from therapy today, when you didn't immediately first answer, I opened YouTube to like play something to entertain myself. But one of the first things that came up on YouTube was a interview of Brittany from the Valley, I guess now, but they were Vanderpump Rules, and she was being questioned on about Jax because Jax has come out as being a coke addict, alcoholic, whatever, the
Okay.
whole thing. And the interviewer was talking to her about it, and Brittany was like, honestly, last night at the premiere party of the new season, people were asking me, are you so proud of him? And she was very honest in this interview now because she was like, you know, I didn't know what to say because I suffered as his wife and mother of his child for the last 10 years. I've been trying to get him help for 10 years. And so, am I proud of him right now? I mean, I don't know what I'm feeling right now. Like, she was just like, I don't even know, like, kind of insinuated, like, she doesn't even know if he's actually sober right now. But, like, it definitely shows the frustration from a family member or loved one's side of it. And I just, my heart, like, broke and related all in the same to what she had said. And, like, discussing just how exhausted she's been through this experience. And it's like, yeah, he should be sober. This is what he should finally be doing. But she's obviously still really angry about everything that he's put her through. So anyway, sorry. Reality TV. Sorry if you don't listen to reality TV. Yeah,
I
Bravo
always
is one
like
of
Brittany.
my favorite escapes. So.
Now I like her even better. But that's a great example of how the family is overlooked.
Yeah.
You know, and people are focused on him or on the alcoholic and addict. And we typically are too. And we get caught up in, oh my God, I have 30 days, I have 60 days. And here's the crazy part is that we'll get really positive feedback and encouragement from our peers, but we don't get it from you guys. I'm starting to get off track here, but when we don't get it from you guys, we alienate ourselves a little more from y'all, stick with our peers, and we start this cycle, you know, of really sabotaging the relationship. So, gosh, I wish I could reach out to her and go, look, Katie and I did it. You
Right.
can too.
Come be a guest
So,
on our podcast. We've got
yeah.
3 listeners, and 2 of them are us.
That's true. And not even, well, I'm hoping our extended family listens,
Yeah.
but
Yeah. But I
yeah.
wish that it, I could reach out to her and be like, I feel what you're feeling and it's okay. And it's like, yeah. She's gonna get through it though. Like she's talked to, I mean, she immediately lit up in the latter half of the interview talking about her son and how, yeah, she's kind of separated herself from everything. So, yeah, she seems happy enough.
Okay, this
Hopefully,
is
she'll
good.
get even happier though. So,
And we don't know how old that YouTube video is or how much time he's got in recovery, because that changes everything too. I
yeah.
mean, time alone does not fix things, but time does help, because as I feel like one of the best things I did for our relationship was maintain my sobriety. And I talk about that a lot. And I think here's another side note that we're going to have to address sometimes relapse.
Yeah.
Because I think continuous sobriety, first time through treatment, is unusual.
Yeah.
So,
I
but
think
that's another.
that that's something that I definitely would love for your education to me in as well, because I think that my anything I right off the bat say about relapse is probably not. It would be me drawing a hard line. Like I don't know where our relationship would be now if you had relapsed a year in, 2 years in. It would have probably made this that much more difficult. And so families that are struggling with that, yeah, my heart goes out to them. And so, yeah, I would love your education on that
Well,
personally.
let's come back to, let's make that a whole episode,
Yeah.
because I'd like to hear more about what it would have been like. But in light of that, let's switch gears.
Yeah, who
And
knows? Who
let's,
knows what it would have been
last
like?
week, I shared my story, a little bit of my drinking history and early recovery, because that's part of my platform. Getting sober is not enough to repair those relationships, and it takes work after that. So, being a adult child of an alcoholic, tell us a little bit, and you can start where you want, or I can prompt you. Tell us a little bit about your experience of being a child of an alcoholic.
Yeah. Great question. yeah, my story as it pertains to this subject specifically. Yeah. I mean, I discussed in the first kind of intro that you were always like an amazing mom and like a super mom. You did it to the best of your ability. And so when that took a turn, and alcohol got a hold on your brain and the chemistry of it. And even, oh my gosh, even going back 10 years to hear myself now say alcohol got a hold of your brain and you didn't get a hold of the alcohol, it's just like trippy to me then. 'Cause back then I would have been like, oh, that's all in your control. Just put it down. But okay, anyways, sidetracked.
All right, let me ask you a specific question. When do you think, at what age were you that you became aware that drinking was an important part of my social life, my life? I'm curious about this. We've never discussed this. So, listeners, this could be shocking for me. And I'll expand upon that in a minute. But at what
Well, I didn't
point?
realize afterwards until afterwards, but there are things that now looking back on were probably off. And like thinking back, like way back, even when like my little brother, like we were little, I remember you had your like special Diet Coke. There it was like, was that special Diet Coke or is that normal Diet Coke? Can I have a sip of your Diet Coke? Can I not have a sip of your Diet Coke? Being on your like bedside table at night, because we used to always love to crawl into bed and sleep with you, especially when like dad was out of town and stuff.
Yeah.
But I never thought twice about it then. My frustration as maybe a preteen or teenager really came in from you having like foggy memories and making promises that weren't kept. And then you'd claim to forget that you made that promise. And then it was like we were made out to seem like we were lying and like you didn't never like actually say that. And I'm like, no, you said that last week. And it was just those were frustrating things as a kid. So those were probably the earliest memories, but I didn't quite know at the time that it was related to drinking. I thought it was related to you probably being tired, and maybe that was contributing to overworked. You were doing had your hands in too many things. Grandma and grandpa had different health battles and struggles, and yeah, it was probably all tied together, but those memories of.
Okay, so let me ask you this, and this is as much for our listeners, and I'm not trying to discount or take away from what you said, because that's all true. And I was prepared for a much uglier story from you. But as we talk and do this, we're probably going to trigger some memories in each other. And I want people to know that this is going to be raw. And we're going to try and be as honest about our feelings and experiences as possible. So, I certainly remember the last couple of years of my drinking as being pretty ugly and embarrassing,
Well, those
but
were
I.
the first couple years of like being annoyed and frustrated with like symptoms of the drinking. So the last couple years, my experiences would be different.
Okay. Well, let's jump into that a little bit. And I've got some questions. So, at what point would you say you realized that alcohol was the problem during those last couple of years? And people ask me that a lot. They go, "What did your kids say to you? Did your kids confront you?" And I think you're the only child. Matthew confronted me once, but I think you're the only child who really brought it to my attention.
I don't know. I think I wasn't aware of how much you were drinking. There were times in your like spiral that you were like visibly drunk in front of us. But I didn't necessarily know that alcohol was a problem. I mean, it literally, I remember being home for like Thanksgiving or something beforehand, and we were eating Mexican food, and we sat down, and the waiter went ahead and brought you a vodka Diet Coke. And you freaked out, and you were like, I can't have this. And I had no education on alcoholism at the time. And I was like, it's one drink. I, as a kid at in college, whatever, I was like, what are you talking about? Why are you freaking out? It's one drink. And I'm sure you drank it. after hearing your kid give you the permission to, but that was the moment that I was like, you had mentioned, you were like, it's one drink. I've been trying to stop. I think I went, you might have admitted to going to an AA meeting that week. I don't know. But I,
I
that
think
was the moment that I was like, wait, what is going on here? Like, there's
okay.
something more happening.
That's okay. That's very interesting.
And I
So,
have
because
guilt around allowing you to drink that drink and not understanding back then too. I think about that.
well, and that's a really common experience. You'll hear a lot of people, especially newcomers to 12-step meetings, they'll talk about how they were at a family event and that a family member said, well, one beer is not going to hurt one glass of wine. In fact, my best friend in California, 3 or 4 years into sobriety, she's like, are you sure? Are you sure you can't have just one? Because she's just not familiar with the disease. I'm like,
Yeah.
it's not worth
But
it.
once
So.
we familiarize ourselves and figure it out, it's like, oh, one, it you don't stop at one. Like one just is like gives yourself a taste or a smell, and it's like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 until you're obliterated. Yeah.
That's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
All right, so your first, let's jump into treatment. I don't think you were home. It was February 14th. It was Mardi Gras. I don't think you came home for that Mardi Gras because spring break at college was different. What did you think when you first heard that I went to treatment? And had dad or anyone mentioned to you? I'm pretty sure by then I'd been like, I'm trying to do AA. But what were your first thoughts?
I probably did experience a little bit of relief because that Christmas break was traumatic. It was bad. It was wow. What the heck is going on? Like, it was horrible from my experience in that, like, there was no light. There was not a glimmer of hope in your eyes. Like, you just were blatantly lying about what you were doing. You could not hear reality. Oh, it was bad. And so when dad said had driven you up to a treatment facility, there was like a feeling of relief, which probably very quickly went away when it was like, oh, she's still there. Like, the addict is still in the facility. Like, this isn't helping clear your brain instantaneously. And so
That certainly
the
came afterwards.
relief, yeah, probably turned into frustration. And then, like, the anger about everything set in.
I was not great about calling you guys. Here's a practical piece of advice. If your loved one is in treatment or is away from home or in a halfway house, do you wish you would have heard from me more? Or were you glad to have the break from the drama or
Yeah,
somewhere in between?
somewhere in between, but the phone calls and like your letters were not reassuring at the time. They were as, and you've admitted this, they were very surface level. They were not expressing loads of remorse, loads of concern for us, for
Did they selfish?
oh, yeah. Yeah. It was, yeah, very self-centered, self-involved.
And I know they were awkward for me to write. And I have to be honest, I saw people call their family members every day, and it was just painful. I'm not trying to explain it. It was just for me. So what advice would you
Can
give?
you explain why it was painful?
I didn't know what to say. I didn't want to hear any rejection. I didn't want you to get mad at me or yell at
But it
me.
was painful hearing, like, seeing other patients doing what you wanted to be doing. Like, why was it painful? I
Well,
want to
that part wasn't
unpack
so
that a little bit.
painful. I really was kind of jealous of
Okay.
that they could comfortably talk to their family members when I felt like I had such a fear and such a wall that I resisted.
Yeah.
So that also is part, no, that sounds like an excuse. It was really hard for me to be vulnerable and honest with you. So maybe that's one piece of advice that you would give to someone like me who's in treatment or early recovery is to go ahead and take the risk to be vulnerable. Would that have made a difference to you if I had cried on the phone or said, I don't know, if I just opened myself up a little bit more?
Yeah.
Or would it have been better for me to voice a bigger interest in you? Or
Yeah, I
both?
think a combination of both of those would have helped a lot. From our experience, it seemed very superficial.
Was superficial.
Yeah, and
Absolutely.
avoidant to the reason you were there. Yeah.
Well, and I think maybe too, it was part of my denial, but I still was trying to protect y'all from knowing how bad it was, how miserable I had been emotionally. One of the things, this is a generational thing that I've talked about. I had this aha moment recently on a podcast of all things that I was never, well, we were never encouraged to ask for help. I grew up thinking like asking for help was showing a sign of weakness. So perhaps I wanted to come across as strong and resilient, and I got this, as opposed to being more honest and open. So,
Yeah.
I mean,
I think
it's hard to
some of
say
it,
because I
yeah.
was thinking earlier, part of that was a fog. Like when you mentioned like that very next Thanksgiving when I was like 7 or 8 months sober, I don't remember that. I mean, I honestly don't remember much of that.
Yeah. Do you think other people's stories at the time, because I've heard you say this in the past, and I've heard some other people in recovery say this, is that you'll minimize and you may have minimized how much damage you caused because you heard the stories of other people and what
Absolutely.
they were doing to their children or to their friends and their family. And it was like, oh, you did that. I'm good. I'm good. My family members should take me back like this because I didn't do that.
That's absolutely true. That's
Yeah.
true. I did a lot of comparing myself to other people,
Yeah.
judging myself on that. And
But ultimately, it comes down to like your own interpersonal relationships. It doesn't matter if your addiction wasn't as bad as, Deborah
Well,
Jobs.
trauma. Here's one of the things
So,
we learned. Here's a book point. Trauma is trauma is trauma.
yeah,
You
yeah.
know, a lot of times we talk about, and even I've done this, talked about big trauma versus little trauma. But science and research is showing that trauma impacts us the same.
Yeah.
And what's big
And
trauma to me?
Janice's kids were just as impacted as Deborah Jo's kids in
Exactly.
maybe different ways, but like it doesn't negate what we went through, and how much we were hurting.
I wonder how long it took for us to get to the point where you felt like I was beginning to validate your feelings. Because I think I started doing that at about 6 months sober, which is a crime in itself. But I still didn't have a whole lot of contact with you guys then. So when do you think you started to think, Mom gets it? She's beginning to get this.
Not at 6 months. No. At 6 months sober, I was in tears in a corner of Ruby Tuesdays with you when you came to visit. And I was in tears because you were not hearing what I was saying. And I don't even remember the specifics of it. I just remember the feeling of like ultimate frustration of like, oh my gosh, this is getting nowhere. And I don't even know if that was at 6 months. Was that at 6 months?
It was shortly after 6 months.
Somewhere.
It was a couple months after that, because that's after I had been kicked out of the halfway house, and I was trying to say, "Oh, I've had a terrible bottom. Poor, pitiful me. My life got worse." As opposed to, "Tell me what's going on with you. How's school?"
Well, maybe a couple years into sobriety, it kind of finally felt like you started listening. And your efforts to reach out definitely did eventually strengthen and become stronger. And it's like you would pass through and bring me my favorite Mexican food, the from Birmingham on your way through to go take care of grandma in Texas. And it's not like Tuscaloosa was even really on the way over. Like you were driving out of your way to come through and say hello. And it was signs like that that like I think started to, chip away at the boundaries. And not that my boundaries needed to be chipped away, because I think boundaries are important and great. And I think we still have boundaries with each other. But that I was opening the door again to like, hearing you out and rebuilding something.
Okay, so for our listeners,
The efforts are important. I think that's where we are going with this.
okay, big efforts, little efforts, what counted most?
Any sort of effort.
That's key. Any sort of effort. You guys hear that out there? So what are some things that you found? And of course, this is going to change from one person to the next. This is not true for everyone. That really, was there anything that you can pinpoint that was destructive? Like definite no's, do not do this. For instance, one of my definite no's when I've been in counseling is never say to a person, "I know how that feels," or, "I know how you feel." Perhaps my talking about myself, boasting about my accomplishments.
Yeah, some of the destructive things that were probably bad for our relationship were moments that we needed to, like, conversations we needed to have to get past them and through them. You giving too much validation and reason for your wacky things you were doing in sobriety. And it's not like a whatever. My mom's wacky. I'm wacky. We're abnormal people. But there were things that my mom would do, and then she'd give reason for them to be like, my therapist says to do this, and use them. My therapy or the program as a defense mechanism rather than hearing me out. And I just wanted to be heard. Like, I just wanted my feelings to be heard. It wasn't even necessarily like that anything needed to like change. Like, you could have still proceeded with whatever route you needed to in order to keep your sobriety. But it was like there were times that you just clocked out and you were like, nope. Not going to listen to that because my therapist says I need to do it this way or whatever, whatever. And I just wanted to be heard on the other side of it. And you could have just listened, like taken 5 minutes to listen. And I think our struggles there for then me then getting upset about you not hearing me out and not listening, those were arguments that we needed to get through in order for next time for you to like listen to the other side of things too.
Okay. How about
Probably
one
didn't
of the
say that
things
in the
that I
best way.
wish? Well, because my head just jumped into God, it would have been nice to have a little more education for both of us at that point, you know, for me to know a little bit more about how you were feeling and for you to have, or for the family members to have a little more education about what's going on, what's
Yeah.
normal, what's
But you,
normal for
I mean, yeah.
a recovery.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I could have learned
No, I'm
more
not
about that
blaming
stuff.
you or saying that.
I think it also just circles back to like the, at the time I was just really frustrated because you were very you were in like the pink cloud and like of excitement of like we should all be proud of you. And it was very self-centered and probably key to keeping like that's probably an important part of recovery and staying sober and being proud of yourself. You don't want to be depressed or else like then here we like you'll relapse. I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, the pink cloud's probably an important part, but family members and loved ones just are they just want to be acknowledged as well for the pain and their pain to be acknowledged from the damage that has been caused.
Okay, so what I heard you saying that one maybe one of the most important steps would be to be listened to make time. And would that be eye to eye contact? Could it be Zoom? What if you're separated from your family?
Yeah, I think it could be any one of those things. But who knows? At the time, also something to think about and consider is like maybe you weren't ready to confront the emotions that like we had. So, and that
Absolutely.
helped protect your sobriety. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't want to say to someone, you definitely have to go do this with your kids today because like maybe they're not ready for it. You know what I mean? And I think that's
No, I
something that
that's a really
we should throw out there as well.
No, I think that's a really good point because early sobriety, you know, your tools are not established. You don't have the same coping mechanisms to escape or numb painful feelings. Yeah, so there's a really fine balance, and I feel like I could have done a little more. I could have at least said, I'm trying to get there, and
Yeah.
that might have been helpful. But listening, you know, and that's a whole nother topic is detachment. How do you detach? How do you listen to another person's story without whatever they're talking about, without automatically coming up with a rebuttal? How to listen and just absorb, which is probably the most important aspect of communication.
Yeah.
So, since we've been kind of negative, do you want to jump into like some of the healing aspects.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
All right. So, the biggest question I get asked a lot is how long did it take for your kids to start to trust you again? And I think trust is a big topic and we should devote a whole session to it. So, I'm going to reel that back and say, how long did it take for you to be willing to consider healing our relationship, that you wanted to try and get it back? And I'm sure there was an odd balance, like I want it, but I don't dare, you know, my boundaries are up. When do
Yeah.
you think that you started to open the door a little?
Well, I wanted to heal our relationship from the start, and all of my frustrated tears and all of my pain and all of my personal issues that I may have had with you, resentments about being in the situation that we were in, I still wanted my mom back the whole time. Like, I wanted my mom, the mom who takes care of us, the mom who like loves us through all of our mistakes. I wanted that mom back, the whole time. But So I think with our bound with the boundaries I had up, I had, the door was still cracked, I think, the whole time. But I had to find ways of making some of the painful things that were happening in your early sobriety, less painful for myself. And like, I had to find, strategies to like mentally be okay with the situation. I think that we have to mourn our loved one in this process, and it's weird mourning someone that's still alive, but I think that that was a big part of my healing process, is being having to accept that the mom that I wanted to just resurface was gone. And that was a difficult process. That was a really painful process. But in that, it made healing our relationship possible. And like, you are that mom, though. Like, you are the unconditionally loving mom who cares more about her kids than anything else. And you are who you are, and you've came back to yourself. But in order for, like, in those early years, I had to be okay with maybe never seeing that mom again. Is that possible? Does that make sense? I don't know.
That makes sense. You kind of have to let it go. And I don't think I'm the same mother. I'd like to think, and I'm still evolving, that I'm still growing and
You're even
improving.
better.
Well, I like to think that. And that was very flattering and kind of took my breath away. So thank you for that. Kind of threw me off because I wasn't seeking reassurance. I was seeking reassurance for our listeners who want to know. And I guess you gave that. It will get better. It's going to look different,
Yeah.
though. Now, from my point of view,
But taking care of ourselves was an important part of it.
right, self-care, that's a huge part. And again, there's a balance between, and this is probably more important from on our side, the alcoholic or addict side, of balancing our self-care and reaching out. But I have to say, it's almost, I mean, intellectually, I understand that you probably always kept that door cracked open. And I'm not saying poor, pitiful me, but I certainly couldn't feel it. And not because of what you were doing, but because of the own guilt and shame within me and the own anger at myself. So that's an important block to healing, is that I don't think I felt deserving of y'all's love again, even though I wanted it desperately. I
Yeah.
mean, that is on the first page of my book, and that the thing I wanted more than anything else when I went to treatment was to earn back y'all's love, trust, and respect, because I knew I had lost it. Now, here's,
Yeah.
okay,
But
now
that's
again, I'm
like
going to.
more of like a, you know what I mean? Like we each had to get past our own things. Like I had to be okay no matter the outcome. And yeah, we had to start figuring out where we both were individually before we could come together. But I think seeing one another's sides when we did finally come together was a really crucial part of the story of our journey. And something that I reflect back on now is like hearing where you're coming from. Like I have a lot more like empathy, and it makes me feel a different way now hearing how you were feeling at the time versus back then. I didn't care what you were feeling at the time because I wanted to be heard as well. So I think it's interesting now, years later, but getting to that point where like we're taking care of ourselves, and then hopefully, like we eventually started to see one another's sides as well.
Right. Yeah, you say that so well, Katie.
No, I don't know.
You
I feel
are
like I
the
just rambled.
teacher and I'm the student. Yeah, no, I think that you made a lot of great points there in terms of forgiveness and self, I mean, taking care of yourself, self-care. That's a big part of it. A big part of it. And looking at the self-awareness of it too. So that reminds me of an important point. One of the things that I am guilty of is that sometimes I misplace some of my feelings or hurts from my wounds of with my relationship with my mom onto you. And one of the ways that I come to terms with that and resolve that, like, because I may overreact to you going, that dress doesn't look good on you. When it's really a good constructive criticism, you know what I mean? What I have to do is build up the self-awareness and know that that is not our relationship, that other my past histories come into that. And one of on the positive side of that I do this quite often, is that and I've said this on a podcast recently, my parents were very much authoritarians. And I did not speak back to them. I was not assertive like you. I just obeyed, and I could never stand up to my parents' native way. So when I look back on those relationships and I go, they're nice. My parents were good. They had good intentions. They were flawed, but they had good intentions. That then I look at my relationships with you guys and I go, oh, it's such a blessing. My relationships with you guys are even in the bad times were probably better than the bad times that I had with my parents. You know what I mean? Like, I may not have made the best decisions in early sobriety, but I was getting there and I was searching. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I think
So
that's the
I
best we can all
value.
do is try and like improve ourselves and figure out what works in life.
Yeah. Which takes me back to like self-forgiveness. That's kind of, that was a big part of my healing. And I think I've maybe for that I forgive others easier than I forgive myself. I'm definitely harder on myself than that. But I think in relationships like there's where trust has been broken, things have happened, especially like you said, all the lies that I told at the end of my active addiction. And I'm sure that those were not the last lies I told. I'm sure because my nature growing up was manipulation, telling people what they wanted to hear, sometimes lying by avoiding by not answering. What's that term when you just lie by not
Lie by
telling the whole truth?
omission.
Yeah. So I think I still continue to do some of that in early recovery without really being cognizant of it, not excusing it, still wrong, but not cognizant. So, do you want to talk about forgiveness for a minute? Yeah, some st I'll put on my little teacher hat. I have a great recipe for making amends and apologies, but I want to piece apart forgiveness. And in terms of accepting forgiveness. So, I wish this information might come better from you than from me because, and maybe I'm wrong about this. I feel like our family members have to forgive us, the alcoholics, addicts, much more than we have to forgive you. But let's just go through the principles. Is that okay? Whether you're on either side of it. So, one of the things I think it's important to acknowledge, we've talked about that you wanted to be here heard. And you need to acknowledge the pain, the harm that you've done, and acknowledge it within yourself too. Have to make an effort to seek to understand what it is, because yeah, I can go, I understand. I'm trying to think of an example. I understand that when I was late for your piano recital, that it hurt your feelings. Or I want to say I'm sorry for showing up to your piano recital late and being drunk. That's an easy thing to apologize for. Intellectually, you can go, that was a stupid thing to do. I'm sorry. I can see it's embarrassing. But it's not me really trying to understand the depth of your feelings associated with it. And this is purely a, because Katie didn't take piano, this is purely a made-up situation. So my effort needs to be to try and understand your feelings, listen to it, and empathize, put myself in your shoes. Now, if you are the one forgiving, it's helpful to look at that person's point of view. Which I see a lot of that in you. Like, I hear a lot of understanding now from you about like why I didn't come home, why I went to a halfway house. You understand now intellectually why that was a good choice for me. And that helps you in forgiving. At the time, you probably didn't understand. And because there's no information, it might have been better for you to make a decision to keep that wall up. So when you're trying to forgive someone, you have to like you acknowledge it, you make an effort to understand, to hear the person, and then you make a decision at what level of forgiveness you're willing to offer. This is a key one, I think, is to separate the person from the pain. This is really important for family members. And evolves over time is understanding that addiction, alcoholism, substance use disorder, is an illness, and that not every, thank God, not everyone's going to get it. Some people are more prone to it. And if you can separate the illness from the person, because you're not going to get mad. I never got mad. Well, I got frustrated with my mother for eating sugar, even though she was a diabetic, but I didn't get mad at her for being a diabetic. You know, so if you can separate your family member from the illness and learn, understand what you can about the illness, it will help loosen. I don't know what's the word I'm looking for there. It'll help not take it personal. However, that's not to say
But it
that you're
is
not.
hard to, it is difficult for loved ones and family members to. Like for example, like getting upset with grandma when she was eating sugar as a diabetic. You know, if grandma sincerely says, "I'm so sorry that I'm doing this," but then has, you know, sugar right after she says it, it's difficult to say, "Well, that was sincere." You know what I mean? Like there has to be some sincerity in an apology, but also steps moving forward
Action.
to avoid that action moving forward or to make changes moving forward. Or else the
Absolutely.
apology is meaningless.
It's not. And that's where you have to decide what's safe to forgive. And sometimes it is, you have to look at the situation. You know, what is the weight of my anger towards my mom over her choosing to still eat sugar? And in the scope of everything, I choose to let it go. And that's not being codependent or walked on. It's like, okay, in perspective, let me put it into its place and I'll choose to let it go. Different with drinking and so on.
Very
But
different with
that.
drinking, but yeah, choosing your battles in life is definitely something to learn over the years. It's like, you know, some arguments aren't worth having, and it's just like you accept someone for who they are. And it's like, okay, if they love a Coca-Cola and you have a hard line on soft drinks, it's like, you know, you just let it go. That's a battle you need to be okay with them Like if it's not your body, I don't know. Yeah.
Right,
So
but you
choose
made
your
a
battles in
point.
life.
Choose your battles. I think that's crucial. So, but it's also important that you express your feeling about it. I was too afraid of my mom to go to ever like look her in the eye and go, "It scares me that you're not paying attention to your diet and it's gonna impact your health." Because, and so I'm sure those feelings came out sideways. They might have come out as resentments. I might have made faces like this when she's like, "Oh, will you get me another?" So that's why it's important to express your feelings. Don't so they don't come out sideways. They're honest, authentic. Okay, so big one is which we kind of just talked about, is to release the need to try to fix, control, or get even, depending on the wound that you're dealing with. That could be a whole conversation too, because I think different people were raised with different ideas of justice. So now I gave kind of an outline. What, I'm going to throw this at you, totally unexpected. What are the limitations when a child or a family member is dealing with the alcoholic addict individual with a substance use disorder? At what is it okay to like take a small step of forgiveness, but not a whole step? What works for the family member? I want your whole forgiveness. I want to tell you that I'm sorry, make a good amends, and have you bless me and never bring it up again. Is that unrealistic?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there were, I don't, you tried to make amends with me how many times? And I was like, nope, not having this conversation right now. And you'd be like, are you ready for it? And I'd be like, nope, I'm on my way elsewhere, doing something else. And I think that the person in recovery needs to respect where their loved one is. Like, that was obviously a box you really, really, really wanted to check off. And you were like, let me just do it already. Let me just do it already. But it's like, I don't know. Does it really mean anything if your loved one isn't ready to like accept it? I don't know. That's something from your, like, on your side of it and your perspective. That's, I'd love your input on. Like, is
No, I
it,
think that's great. I think I because there's a couple sides to that sword.
yeah. And I'm
Both
sure there are
partners have to
amends
be
that,
ready to
like,
receive it.
yeah, but I'm sure there are amends that someone in recovery needs to be okay with not receiving. You know what I mean? Like, there's probably people out there that have been hurt and so badly burned that, like, that relationship might not be able to recover. And, as a sober person, you've got to be okay with that and stay sober and move on. And you can't base your whole life around this person trying to win that person back over either. So I don't know.
I mean, I hear that all the time too, because we're not going to heal every relationship. Not everyone's going to give us forgiveness. There are not all of my relationships healed to the point that I would like them to.
Yeah, but I don't think you could force your amends on someone. If you want to make amends with
No.
someone and that person's not ready, I think you should just take your time. Keep voicing
Well, and
that
you
you
may.
would like to do it. Keep trying. Keep putting it out there that you like, because eventually they'll say, yes, let's do it and receive it. But don't force it. If they say, nope, not today, you just say, okay.
Okay, so what advice would you give? Because this did happen to me, where an individual kept saying, I feel like I made a good amends. And they kept saying, I'm waiting for your good amends. And I believe that I had made a good amends multiple times. So this is what I say to my sponsees and my people is that, you do what you do to relieve your guilt and shame over it. Recognize that the other person may never be able to give it, and that's okay. But what do you do when they go, I'm waiting, or because this happens a lot. I hear this a lot with married couples or partnerships where one person is still bringing up the pains, their resentments with the other person after amends. Do you have any insight on that?
Oh, I
I
don't
don't.
know. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, unless you're inside that relationship, even then, it's like don't know. Are the amends lacking sincerity, or does this person have an unrealistic standard? You know what I mean? Like it could be taken, received. You could give advice either direction, and I don't think either direction the advice is great advice. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Just keep trying.
Let me,
But
okay, so
I hope
here's
that
another question.
as a loved one, you don't keep stabbing an old wound too. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that message. And maybe someone will hear that and I'll take it to heart. I mean that with all respect. Okay, so this is another question that occasionally comes back. And this might be a perfect example where you get an objective third party. You get a therapist or someone to help you walk through it. Because, like I said before, that hurt could be projection from something else and might have nothing to do with the harm, or the harm triggers it, and that you need someone to look at it deeper. So, Katie, you and I can't remember
I
how
need
many
some more therapy.
therapies. Yeah, but what about you and me? How much therapy sessions did we do?
Us together?
Yeah.
I don't even remember the one that we did do.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was only one
Independently,
or two.
I think you mentioned that we did one session and I said X, Y, and Z, but I don't remember that at all. I think individually we've both worked on ourselves a lot and done a lot of individual therapy. And I think that that has definitely helped our relationship in the long run to get better, is just us each growing and trying to become better versions of ourselves. That then leads to better mental health and like more space in our lives for each other.
Yeah. And you hit the key point on it is that we both continue to do our work, which, when you have someone that you wish you long for, you could repair that relationship, you still do your work. You don't give up on it. I mean, you set your boundaries and limits, you don't set unrealistic expectations, but it's not permission to not do your work. So.
It's just about meeting each other where we were at the time. And obviously that's improved, and we're in each in better places, and therefore we're in a better place together. But the steps in us meeting each other where we were back then too, that was an important beginning part of regrowing our relationship.
How are we on time?
We have 7 minutes left, so.
All right. So let's take, can we round this up? I always love to like have a couple of takeaways and then maybe throw out there. First, I want to throw out there topics that I feel excited about for the next couple of times. And if any of our listeners have an opinion, email us. My email's on my website, which is janicejohnsondowd.com, or you can DM me at either parenting_in_recovery or Janice Johnson Dowd. Those are Instagrams. But I was thinking, because I kind of teased that whole topic of trust. That's a big one. When we talked about relapse, and I feel like relapse is really tied into harm reduction. That's where people try to moderate their drinking or drug use or involved with using medicated assisted treatment. Those add an additional hurdle to relationships or good old boundaries. Do you have any other topics that you're really passionate about, Katie?
Yes, tons, just none are coming to mind at the moment.
Okay. Well, who knows what we'll talk about next week? I'm going to jump in with my most important takeaways, and my point here is twofold. This is what I've really clung on to, but I also want to give you the opportunity to go, Mom, this is an important point that I shared and you missed. Okay. So I think my, and next time I'm going to take notes, but I think my biggest takeaway from your part of the conversation was to be a really good listener, be patient, and make more effort, even small efforts. Was there anything else that you shared?
No, but something we haven't shared on this episode is that we really the real reason we're here is we want to provide hope to people and that relationships can recover and they can get better. Sobriety is obviously key in that. And if you hadn't maintained sobriety this whole time, I don't know where our relationship would be right now. But yeah. We're here to share hope that you can get through it and get past it. And along the way, share some stories of some of the difficulties we experienced in getting here. But all of that probably contributed to us being here.
Do you have any takeaways?
I think that listening was a big part of it. You're putting me on the spot for how much I actually paid attention to our own
That's
podcast.
okay. Nerves get in the way. So,
Yeah.
well, I will let you close up. I just what you said about hope is really my platform. Reuniting families, breaking cycles of generational trauma or dysfunction is my number one agenda. And I really enjoy sharing my conversations with my daughter with you guys.
Yes. So thank you all so much for tuning in. Please check out my mom's website, janicejohnsondowd.com, or her social media pages, Parenting and Recovery. And she just had a book published March 4th. So was the release date. We're all, me and my brothers, are very, very proud on the release of this book. It is actually on this topic. It is called Rebuilding Relationships and Recovery by Janice Johnson Dowd. So you should go get a copy. Thank you all
Thanks.
for listening. If you've listened this far, appreciate y'all. Love you.
Bye.